Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
More people than ever are off to university next month in the UK. Why? Because the virus meant students didn't sit exams and teachers gave their assessments, which has inflated numbers, which raises the question anyway, are too many people going to university? Is it helping the economy or is it just keeping unemployment numbers down in the short term? And what should students be studying at university? Are vocational degrees the way forward or not? And is there a halfway house between university and unemployment that doesn't involve fixing someone's leaking pipes for the rest of your life? Lots of questions on this week's Debunking Economics podcast with Professor Steve King. I'm Phil Dobby. Join us and see what we think. Well, there was quite a hoo-ha when the A-level results came out in the UK last week, because this year, because of COVID, rather than sitting exams, the students have been assessed by teachers. And guess what? They all did rather well. 45% of all entries across the UK have been awarded top grades, an A or an A star. This compares with 25% 2 years ago, which frankly means the results are as good as hopeless, doesn't it? So does this mean the whole system needs a bit of a revamp? You'd think so, wouldn't you? Well, Gavin Williamson, the education minister in the UK, at least he is when we're recording this, he's got a plan to make sure that we don't get too many people getting A or A star by replacing the letters with numbers. That should fix the problem. In other words, everyone getting a 1 or a 2 rather than an A or an A star. I kid you not. That is what they're thinking about. But COVID aside, have we got the wrong idea about education? Steve Keen is no fan of the education system, as you know, if you're a regular listener to this podcast. But part of the problem, I think, is that it's not open to the sort of alternate thinking, the sensible thinking that we espouse on this podcast and you can hear in other outlets. But subject matter aside for the moment, just sheer numbers. Steve, are we educating too many people for too long? Or is more education better for the economy? I mean, conventional thinking says yes, an educated workforce is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have a lot of fun slashing into the British system in particular, which I experienced when I was head of school at Kingston for a few years. But the point I'll start with is that the way economists think about production and productivity is based on their model of production itself, which for neoclassical economists is what's called the Cobb-Douglas production function. And they see output as being reduced by a combination of technology, labor, and capital. And then when they try to weight the different components and say, well, what change in output is due to what change in inputs, the two inputs that they put the major weighting on a technology, first of all, which there's, then they have A, L, and K. So it's A times labor to a power times capital one minus the power. And the A is supposed to represent what they call total factor productivity. Or when they bundle it up with labor, it's called labor augmenting technical change. And by far the greatest, when they do their statistical analyses, by far the greatest weight in terms of where increasing output comes from is increasing the technology term, which is either seen as total factor productivity or labour productivity, and hence is emphasis on increasing labour productivity.
Which would be fine, except for the arm. And out of that, they're saying, well, okay, if we educate people more, then we're going to get more labour productivity. Is that the argument? Because that's actually not been the case, has it?
Yeah, that's the argument. And it's a load of codswallop, because for a range of reasons, but one of the simplest ways to see that it's relatively nonsense is that this A term in their production function is seen as reflecting labor productivity. But what the ratio of output to labor is telling you is effectively how many workers you need to produce that output. Now, the output is coming out of machines. So when I look at it, I don't see the ratio being our output to labour. I see the ratio being the number of machines versus the number of people needed to operate those machines. And as you have technological improvement, in effect, you need a lower number of people per machine, more of the workers being mechanised and so on. So when you see that increase in the output to labour ratio, what's actually going on is a decrease in the number of workers needed per machine, and the productivity is really occurring in the machinery, not in the workers themselves.
But an educated workforce would mean, or an educated population would mean, those people, rather than working machines, are there doing the next big thing. And obviously, you need more of an education to try to
figure
out.
Yeah, like TikTok.
Okay, TikTok, but some good stuff too. Let's not assume that the youth of today are just
non-fungible tokens. Yeah, I mean, all this stuff is frippery. This is.
So you think that's what's happening? We're getting educated, and then we're just frivoling it away in time wasting endeavors.
Well, I think we're mistaking where the productivity comes from. The productivity comes from developing new technology, which is manifest in the machinery we build.
Right, but the design of that has come from people who've been educated, presumably.
Yeah, but it's not everybody. I mean, you don't have 46% of the work. Was it 46% of the students got A's?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, that's a one-off. That is because teachers have been giving the grades, and that obviously they don't want to give bad grades because it makes them look bad. So, it's because they're not sitting exams. That's
the grade inflation that's built into the United Kingdom's education system, and laughably so from my point of view.
Yeah. Well, I got a BC and a D. I feel really stupid because no one gets a BC and a D these days. But when I went to uni, that was quite normal.
Yeah, but the trouble is the improving technology hasn't come from throwing more people at the design phase of designing these new machines. It's been a tiny number of people. And again, I'll come back to my Elon Musk fanboy material. The people designing the Falcon rocket, it's not because you've got more people working in the office. It's because you've got truly creative engineers being given free license to design the most powerful engine ever.
But they're educated engineers.
But when it's put together, I mean, in the manufacturing itself, you actually end up de-skilling to some large degree the people that actually work those machines. It's not that an educated process worker will turn out more than an uneducated process worker. If the work involved is actually a physical input by the worker, it's that the machine itself is that much more powerful, processes energy that's more effectively. That's where your increase comes from. So to believe you can actually get increased output by having a more educated workforce, when you educate them more, what you're then talking about them getting involved in is a service industry, how do you measure productivity in terms of TikTok episodes or non-fungible tokens produced per person? It's not the stuff that actually is even measured in GDP. So I think the emphasis upon increasing labour productivity as the source of increasing GDP is just wrong-headed. If you want to do that, then you train up, you try to find the hyper-intelligent people who can be damn good engineers, you train them up and you pay them well. That is far more effective than trying to educate, half the workforce to university standard.
Yeah, it's 40% actually. So 40% of all adults in the UK now have a degree. In 2002, it was 25%. In the 80s, when I was there, I think it was a lot, lot less than that. So you're saying, make it more elitist, are we saying? You've got to reach a higher academic standard to go to university?
Yeah, I would like to see in some ways, I think the Germans have still got a better system than the UK. There is a much higher level of respect for technical training in Germany, and you do have apprenticeships where people come out highly skilled, as machine tool workers and so on, and that side of the education has been denigrated in the UK and the Anglo-Saxon countries in general in favour of shoving people in universities. And then as a response to that, because the level of the number of people going to university has risen so much, to get the same pass rates as before, you simply have to drop the standards. And this now because in a lot of ways, the education system is treated not as a way of being educated, but as a way of being credentialed for future employment. The pressure is put on the staff to give as high results as possible, and it reaches truly ludicrous situations in the United Kingdom. And I'm very glad to be out of that system because it just felt like a joke. And I know to a large number of people who are still stuck on that system, they feel like that they're, they're rewarding, I have a hard time avoiding abusive terms here, but it's throwing more peanuts at the gallery rather than truly educating people.
You're not being an intellectual snob here, are you, Steve?
Yes, I am.
It certainly sounds that way. Look, the reason why people go to university, I mean, some will go there because they feel like they want the intellectual stimulation. A lot will go there because they're not quite sure what to do next. And a chunk of them also because they feel as though, the numbers support this, they're more likely to get a job. So if you look at the OECD average, unemployment for 25 to 64-year-olds, so across the whole age working spectrum, those with no upper secondary qualifications, in other words, those who left school at 16, the unemployment rate across the OECD is 9.3%. Those with a tertiary qualification, it's 3.8%. That's a staggering difference. And in the UK, it's the difference is between 4.9% for those who left at 16 and 2.1% for those who are graduates. So it does improve your chances of getting a job, which is obviously why people are going to university.
Yeah, it does.
And so whether it's a useful job or not is your point.
And that's partly the trouble.
But if it's not a useful job, what are they going to do? Just be unemployed, which is no use
either. Or because you get so many more people qualifying for each particular profession, then you get a fall in the wages on average for that profession, which is increasing income inequality, and ultimately it ends up being not a case of how educated you are, but who your father is. Like I had my own personal experience of this, in a sense, in 1971 when I went to Sydney University to do a degree in arts and law, because that happened to be the year that New South Wales University opened up its law degree, meaning we now had two law courses in one university. And then by the time I graduated, I think Macquarie University had a law course. And what it meant was that initially there was such the supply of new lawyers was somewhat less than the demand coming out of the private law firms for new lawyers. So, if you were going to graduate and that was the supply situation, you were pretty much guaranteed getting a job in a private firm and being paid very well for it. By the end of it, the thing that guaranteed whether you get a job or not as a graduate was whether your father already worked in a law firm. Mm-hmm. And so, in effect, by expanding the opportunity, you actually returned it to the days where it was a sinecure for the sons and daughters of the bourgeoisie.
You go back to choosing the connections. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's partly there's actually, I find by Peter Turchin's work on this quite fascinating, and he argues that one of the things which leads to social breakdown in a society is too many people being produced for elite positions. Now, he uses things like the example of senators in America, where I think there's 100 senators. When you had a small number of people in the country, then the number of people competing for those Senate positions was relatively small as well. And now you have the population it's got and the political fragmentation. The competition is that much fiercer for that minority of positions. But a similar thing applies in terms of graduates from law schools looking for jobs in law firms. And the vast majority of graduates from law schools these days are unlikely to be working in a law firm. They might be using their law qualification in some other position in a government bureaucracy or that sort of thing.
Or become a politician.
That's reduced the pay rate they're getting.
Yeah, yeah. Or they become tradies, if you don't go to university, you become a tradie. That seems to be the path, and we know there's not enough of those, so they're actually demanding higher salaries than graduates are very often. Hey, this'll scare you, it probably won't surprise you. It'll make your eyes roll in the back of your head. But the salary benchmarking site emolument.com ranked the starting salaries for graduates from 84 UK universities. This is back in 2017. Mm-hmm. Now, you want to know the university that created the highest salary and the degree course which gave people the highest starting salary? Have a guess.
I'd be going for Oxford and law.
No, London School of Economics. gave you a starting salary of $38,000 compared to Huddersfield, which I'm embarrassed to say is where I went, $24,000. And £33,000 was the starting salary for people who studied economics compared to $28,000 for those who studied an engineering degree or $21,000 for those who studied English literature. So basically, if you do economics at the London School of Economics, you're going to get the best starting salary for a graduate.
Well, we're doomed, aren't we?
I thought you'd like that. But I mean, they're obviously getting employed. So they're doing it because they know they're getting a job. I guess they're working in the finance industry, which obviously we know is a behemoth in the UK.
Well, that's where the outrageous, stupid salaries come from. I mean, as I think I mentioned, the person, one of the people I met very early in my time in the UK, we went from being a finance person to a school teacher because she had enough of the stress in finance, and her pay level was one, as a school teacher, was 1/30th what she was getting in finance. So there's a huge surplus of people who are, you know, get into the ruling class and end up getting the, you know, shares in the profits of the system being paid to them as wages. But for the vast majority, you know, the more access, the less accessible it is. It ends up being who your parents are rather than how educated you are.
So take that point. Should we also then be, I don't believe it should, but do you think that that degrees should be more vocationally based, because there's a real shortage around the world for software engineers and software developers, electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, nurses, doctors, civil engineers? They are the jobs that there's a real shortage of. But the most popular degrees in the UK are business admin, economics, again, finance and management, international business, marketing, banking and finance, and accounting. It's all the money jobs, but they're not the jobs that there's a shortage of people for. So should we do we incentivize people to take courses and become qualified for jobs that are needed?
Well, I think we need to – I think we've loaded far too much on the university sector itself. And that's partly one of the problems that there used to be, certainly I know in Australia there was, and there was, I think also in the UK, it tended to be a three-tiered system. So you could end up, getting trained for technical, clerical, and then university level positions. And then there was big pressure to turn the technical and the clerical into being universally equivalent. And you eliminated that three-tiered structure, and at best you have a two-tier these days, possibly even a one. It's all shoved into the university, so everybody can say they've got a university degree. But there are some, a lot of schools which, to me, university should be something which is about truly using your intellect, having in some sense to be innovative, and
maybe the subject matter is less important. It's just the fact that you are taught to be critical, which is I know that's one of your criticisms, that you're not taught to be critical at university. You're taught by rote.
But also there's, I mean, yes, I'm putting out an elitist case. It should be hard to get into university. The range of subjects taught there should be restricted, and it should not be based on fee payment, the whole idea that you can buy your way into university and therefore you've bought your degree. I've seen that devalue the quality of education dramatically over the last 40 years. So I'd rather have a system where a university is effectively free, but the hurdle to get in there is you know, quite high, and you don't have grade inflation helping you jump the hurdle. But everything that's been done in terms of putting a market orientation on it, you get this ludicrous outcome where university lecturers themselves are under pressure to award large numbers of high degrees. So I know that in my previous university life, your staff could be criticised if there was too low a number of students getting high results. So the whole thing ended up, the easiest way to solve that problem was to drop your standards. And I think there's been an enormous drop in the quality of education standards, certainly in the UK. So you've got more people being shown as being educated, but what they're getting is a far lower grade in terms of learning than what they got 40 years ago, when there was a much smaller number getting through and it was much harder to get in.
But I'm sure the economist's argument would be that, you know, because people have, you know, access to perfect information, you wouldn't take out a student loan for a degree course that wasn't going to give you a higher salary at the end of it, or the chance of a higher salary. You just wouldn't bother. But people are bothering. So why is that? Because perhaps because the information...
Yeah, I mean, because of this student, I mean, school students, you're talking 17, 18-year-olds,
yeah.
You know. And
they haven't done the sums.
If I go back to myself when I was going through school, the positions that I was considering were working. I wanted to be an engineer. Actually, it was my first priority because I love the mathematics and love the modelling involved. But I was pressured for law. And if you look, most people were surprised they didn't do medicine because that's what people with high results did medicine. I never thought I'd ever be an education officer in an overseas aid organization, which I was for a while, or a conference organizer, or a software designer. So the range of things that, you know, 18-year-olds are aware of, even though there's enormous information out there, compared to 40 or 50 years ago, their actual horizons are quite limited. And to have them deciding, what areas they go into, you're going to get hurting. And that's why I think everybody goes off and does a bloody economics degree, which is a waste of space.
Mm. Yeah, could be worse. You could be studying communication studies, which, by the way, you're only going to earn $14,000 a year when you come out at the end of that. So don't bother. So it's interesting. The Department of Education, they've basically been tracking employment and earning outcomes of graduates. They've done a longitudinal study. This is from 2016, so the years up to then. Vocational degrees will give you a better chance of a job and a better salary. So, for example, 68% of medicine and dentistry graduates had sustained employment. In other words, for one year after they'd graduated, they were, you know, they kept a job. They had a median earning of $35,500 a year, which isn't bad for a 21-year-old. Those studying languages, only 45% were employed, and they were earning just $15,000 a year 1 year after graduation. So vocational degrees work to that extent, but only if the vocation, if the job is something that is in demand, obviously, and that people are prepared to pay for. You know, you've got to be smart to do to do medicine, to do communication studies. Dare I suggest, you don't have to be quite so intelligent.
Yeah, but again, to me, the introduction of fees and student debt and so on has exacerbated the bad side of the hurting that occurs with students deciding what to do their education in. Because if you look at, you know, I've got in the UK case, you've got to take £9,000 per year of debt just to simply do any degree. Then the pressure is, well, what's the degree that's going to pay the most? And then that ends up, economics, the bloody London School of Economics, becomes what people aspire to get into. If you didn't have the same pressure that you're actually going into debt to get a future position, if the education was given freely as it was for a short while in the 60s and 70s, then you wouldn't have the same hurting coming out of it, and you might have better prospects for everybody as a result of that, and also education grades you can trust. Whereas, I mean, you know, I just do not trust, unfortunately, what I see is the results of an education, particularly in the UK, where grade inflation is just the name of the damn game.
So if you're 18 and you don't go to university, what do you do? Go and get a job. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying we needed an education system which caters for a range of skills and which teaches the type of which has a technical component where the technical is high quality and deserving of respect. Which, I mean, like in the German apprentice system, from what I've seen there, they really are being trained with state of the art technology and being recruited to companies which work with that high technology, and you have. Being as somebody who works and gets an apprenticeship out of one of those positions, it confers a status, not confers a low ranked position in the world. Whereas in the UK, those same technical qualifications. The equipment is adequate. The companies themselves complain they've got to train the students up themselves. It's really a lot of this, we've made education expensive while reducing the resources that are put towards it.
And that's what I found
the real jam for my own experience. I couldn't wait to get out of the UK system after about 3 years there.
And is it the idea they actually do a specific degree? I mean, what about just continuing education for another few years? And you do a variety of topics rather than actually studying one, so that when you come out at the end, you're a few years older, you've done a bit more critical analysis, you've thought things through a bit harder, and you've got a clearer idea about how you're going to contribute to your career at that point, rather than earmarking law, which in your case was a complete waste of time. I studied geography, which was always going to be a complete waste of time, because if I remember, one of the questions in my finals was what use is geography to anybody?
John Cleese wrote the exam question.
It was something like that. It's obviously worded in academia, but I mean, I was tempted to answer it with just two words: good point. But my career was all picked up on stuff I studied afterwards. So I did study, I did have one of those bullshit jobs in that I was flogging broadband to people. It was a bit more to it than that, because it was, I had to manage the EBIT, I had to do all the forecasting, I had to make sure we had the right product lines that were going to make us competitive whilst also giving that return to shareholders and, as managing people. So, quite an involved job. Amazing that someone would give me a job like that. But actually, I was quite good at it, as it turned out, and helped the company get sold for hundreds of millions of dollars. But all of that came from everything I did after university. So it came from my career up to that point. It came from, I studied Chartered Institute of Marketing. I did a night school course, to try and pick up my knowledge there. But actually, a lot of it was on the job. Like, I inherited a whole load of product managers who seemed better at spreadsheets than I was. I thought, shit, I better get my act together on that, because these people supposedly work for me. So I learned on the job, which has always been my approach. So my education at 18 is less important, but so what you take is less important. So maybe we should be saying, well, why have we got so many subjects and why do we specialize so much?
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, the important educations would be your own literature, like English for those in England, obviously, French for those in France. The sciences, mathematics, and system dynamics I'd be teaching at a very early age.
Yeah.
Okay. But then hope to equip people when they leave school itself to be able to learn further themselves if they need to. And then the ones who wish to specialize, then you have university, you have a technical college teaching in machine tool skills, and you'd have a clerical college teaching what's left of office skills. So that is one area which is going to, with technology, potentially disappear over time. But what we've actually got is so much grade inflation. I mean, when you mentioned that 46% getting A's, I mean, there was some rule, which is actually imposed by the education department on universities, where a university had to explain why it had less than, I think, 70% of students getting honours results in an English university. And I remember meeting a particularly nice guy, but particularly useless character. Got in part of my life back in Australia when I worked in overseas aid, who was very proud of himself for having an honours degree in philosophy, from Cambridge. Now, when I got over an honours degree in Australia means you've got in the top 5% of the class in first year, you're invited to into an honours stream in second year, and then you do an extra year where you do an undergrad, where you get a thesis.
Everyone's got an honours degree here. Yeah, exactly.
Everybody gets an honours degree. You enrol in honours, and 70% of you come out with honours. What a joke. So, consequently, I know if somebody has an honours degree from a Scottish university, I take it seriously. Honours degree from an English university, yeah, what else you got?
So what's you haven't answered the question I asked about whether we should actually have vocational degrees or not. What should happen? You're saying, yes, it should be more elitist. So two questions. If it is more elitist, are you then going on to study something which is vocationally oriented? And are we saying for everybody else, well, you've got to go and do some other form of education, whether it's an apprenticeship or whatever? But does that mean therefore you're not going to work in the service sector? You're going to work as a tradie? I mean, these are all big decisions to be made at 18, which is why everyone holds off by going to study at university for a few years, even if it's a subject that they're going to make no use of whatsoever for the rest of their life.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. There's no easy. It certainly isn't easy. I mean, I'm glad I'm pontificating at the age of 68 rather than back experiencing it when I was 18. so, you know, I feel for the students that are being put through this system because they're really the victims of it being so badly administered. And, pardon me, excessive expectations being put on what yeah. it's going to mean to have that piece of paper when you come out the other side. And I mean, I'll give one little anecdote, which again, focusing just on what the income you're going to make out of something doesn't mean you're going to have a happy life. I bumped into a bunch of accounting students, and like, you know how much I trust and appreciate accounting these days, having built Minsky software. So I have much more respect for accounting than I had when I went through at university. But I bumped into this about half a dozen accounting students I knew at university at a Bucks night they were having at a restaurant in Sydney. And they asked me what I'd been doing. And I mentioned my, you know, short time as a school teacher, working in overseas aid. Then I did the conference with journalists in China and a couple of other things. And one of the group said, "I wish I'd done that." And there was silence. And I thought, hang on. So I said, "Listen, guys, look at all the downside. Like, I'm not employed at the moment. I don't have a house, don't have a car, haven't even got a girlfriend. You know, look on the downside of what I've done." And the kingpin of the group then said on the behalf of everybody there, "Steve, we would all still rather have done what you have done." Mm. I thought, oh, Jesus, how damn depressing. So you end up being defined by your job and you don't like your job.
Yeah.
And that's one of the dilemmas that will face people when they're focused on, you know, at the age of 18 is what's going to get me a retirement benefit when I'm 65. Not a good way to live your life.
So it seems to be right at the beginning of this conversation, you were basically saying, well, you know, we weren't getting the returns from education. That wasn't what was driving the economy forward. And yet, you know, we do spend a lot of money on it. So the countries across the globe spend 4.5% of government spending on education. It's a bit higher in Germany at 4.9%. In the US, it's 5%, 5.1% in Australia. The UK, 5.4%. Sweden, that egalitarian society, spends 7.6% of government money on education. And that's up to and beyond 18. Are you saying, well, we're not getting the return from that? We may as well not be spending that money.
I want to spend more. I'd rather see more spent on education and more paid to school teachers as well, and university lecturers for that matter.
But where does it go then?
What you're creating is a polity. You're creating a community that can actually be not necessarily educated for jobs, but educated for being part of the community itself.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think partly the conspiracy theories and the QAnons and all that sort of nonsense that's become so prominent is because we've denigrated the actual education experience for students all the way through. They go through school and they're just basically going through the motion to get out of the damn system if you're not at the very top in terms of performance. And that, I think, is a large part of where the sense of disenfranchisement has come from. And we're treating them as inputs to a system, you know, effectively measuring them on their economic productivity rather than saying we would like to have an educated society for the sake of having a society that's educated and not to then, you know, if you want to get educated, you end up being in debt. And so your focus education is not on learning about society or learning about the universe. It's about getting a good enough paying job. And then you are then biased in favor of wanting that credential inflation. And we get this ludicrous situation where, as I said, you know, 70% of students are supposed to get honors degrees at English universities.
I know when I was at uni in the final year, companies did what were called the milk rounds. They go to universities and they try and get the best students to join their companies, and they would put them on graduate programs. So, for example, at Mars, if you're going to be, you know, work your way up the ranks of Mars, you had to work in all aspects of Mars. So that, you know, you'd be working in the sales and marketing department. You'd also be working in the factories. You'd be working in distribution. You'd be calling on retailers to, you know, to stock the goods. So the idea was over a year or two, you'd learn everything about the business. And that's where you sort of learnt on the job. It's almost like an apprentice scheme, really, for people in that profession. So we think of apprenticeships as always being sort of hands-on type jobs, sort of semi-skilled labor type jobs. But we could have apprenticeships for more skilled and academic oriented jobs, couldn't we? But we seem to have given up on that because we've left it for universities to do. I wonder whether universities should do less of that and more of the let's just give you a good rounding, doesn't matter what you're studying, and try and encourage companies to go back to that way.
And I thought that was, again, that's the bias that I have. I mean, again, I saw that in the law system I was educated in. So when I began doing my law degree, if you wanted to become a practicing lawyer, you had to go through a period where they called articles, which was a form of apprenticeship in a legal firm. And you were paid, not particularly well, but you were paid as an article clerk, and that you would have to do 2 years as an article clerk before you could then become a qualified solicitor. And there was a similar thing becoming a barrister. But just at the end of my degree, they introduced what they called skills course. And you go to this place over in St. Leonard's, if you know that, in Sydney,
yep.
And spend 6 months of the year in a mock legal firm, taking on mock legal cases where you'd be, you know, suing other of your friends and that one of the other artificial firms and so on. And that was where you learnt your legal skills. And after 6 months of that, then you'd become a solicitor. And I, it was probably cheaper for the law firms to go through that. But to me, it was one step away from the hands-on experience of actually being in a law firm. And I would rather see them, as you were talking about, learning on the job than these, you know, aggrandized, you know, extensions of tertiary education.
So if we abandon the idea then, oh, you can keep on your law degrees and economics degrees, I guess, for those people who want to do it. But for people who are undecided, I wonder why universities haven't cottoned onto the idea that maybe we could just merge together a whole group of subjects for people who want to come out at the end with a more rounded education. I would have thought employers would be going, yeah, we want those people because they've, you know, and it could be stuff like systems dynamics together with art and literature, you know, so you come out at the end, you know, a bit of Latin as well, so you can have a conversation with Jacob Rees-Mogg, you know, do all of that so you come out a more rounded person. I would have thought companies would be, you know, demanding people like that.
Well, I have to say that's probably the part of education that I most gained from, because I didn't do a law degree, I did an arts law degree. Mm. And the arts at that stage meant basically pick any subject you wish to do for 3 years. No. So I rolled in psychology, mathematics and economics. I wish I'd done more maths. I did 1 year of maths in my undergrad. I did 2 years of psychology, the second year, in my opinion, being a waste of time. But the fact that you could choose a portfolio like that was an important part of, you know, who I ended up being. And I would like to see, again, that it was 3 years where you got a chance to direct your own education, having come out of a school system but directed it for you. And I've got a feeling that would be a better start for most people, end up being educated citizens rather than educated employees. And then where you go in future depends upon your own talents and the positions that are available.
Right.
But the extent to which it's become a credentializing system, I think, has demeaned the quality of university education and school education. And if we focus on educating citizens rather than educating employees, I think we'd have a better world.
But you still think that there's too many people going to university? You still think?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, and a lot of that was just disguising youth unemployment. I mean, the expansion in university numbers began in the mid to late 70s.
But it's better they go to university than being unemployed. I mean, if you limit it, aren't they just going to find themselves back unemployed? I mean, the numbers, I know these, when you look at the numbers of people who go to university who are employed at the end of it versus those who don't, who are unemployed, I mean, obviously, those figures are a bit self-determining, aren't they? Because, you mean, they'll be more educated. Mm. People will be smarter who are going off to university, perhaps a little bit anyway, compared to those who don't. And so that's why. So they greater chance of getting a job, obviously, because they're a little bit smarter or they're more confident so they can interview better. All that sort of thing plays into it. It's not just a case of they've gone to university.
Yeah, but
not.
the trouble is the expansion of university was done while underfunding universities at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, my experience at university, I really arrived in the absolute peak period for the quality of university education, certainly in Australia, 1971. My first year tutorials in economics had 10 people, and you'd have a really detailed conversation with one your own colleagues and your tutor. And then by the time I finished up at Kingston and also Western Sydney, there were 30 and 35 and 40 people in a tutorial. And the pay for academics had gone down in the meantime. Mm. So they were trying to squeeze more people through a less well-funded system. And everybody suffered as a result of that. And I think a large part of the angst comes out of that. If you're going to have a university system with a large number of people, you fund it as well as you did for a small number. And that was not done. And that's a large part, I think, of the denigration of education over the last 40 years.
All right, here's the plan then. See what you think of this, because I like to end with a solution. What about you, from 16 to 18, you do your A-levels in this country. What if you did your A-levels from 16 to 20? And you could come, the longer you stay, the more A-levels you do. So maybe you do exams after a couple of years. If you're really smart, you could leave at 18 and go to university. If you're not to that standard, because it would be harder to get into university, you just do another couple of years of A-levels. So you come out with, more qualifications and having extended your education life by a couple of years. What about that for a solution? I don't care what you think. I think it's a brilliant idea. So,
on that note, we'll finish. Thanks very much, Phil.
You're most welcome.
We'll talk to you next week.
Oh, there we are. They were turning the roles, aren't we? Good to talk, Steve. We'll catch you again. So, look, next week, by the way, I want to go and revisit where we were last week, talking about minerals and the shortage, and what will happen if we do see sort of a rampant inflation of our, the core resources we need to survive as a society. How is that going to play out? I want to look at that next week. So we'll do that then. Good to talk, Steve.
Okay.
Let us know what you think too in the comments underneath this podcast. Where is the education sector going wrong? See you next week. Thanks for listening today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you've enjoyed listening to Debunking Economics, even if you haven't, you might also enjoy The Y Curve. Each week, Roger Hearing and I talk to a guest about a topic that is very much in the news that week. It's lively, it's fun, it's informative. What more could you want? So search The Y Curve in your favorite podcast app or go to ycurve.com to listen.